Welcome to Authors of the Pacific Northwest, where we connect Pacific Northwest authors with new listeners and provide advice for aspiring authors on the business of writing. I'm your host, Vicki J. Carter. So hi there, podcast listeners. It's Vicki again for Authors of the Pacific Northwest. And today we have a very exciting author. And I do say that every time that we have exciting author, but I am just excited to have the author today. Her name is Leslie Compton. So Leslie, say hi to everyone.
Hi, so glad to be here.
I'm really glad you're here. So let me set the stage for those listeners of why I'm excited about this interview with Leslie. First, Leslie is a historical author, historical fiction, more so, I would say a little bit more on memoirs. And I was introduced to her from Peter Gibb, or she was introduced to me from Peter Gibb, who has already been on the podcast about memoirs, the wonderful world of authors share with each other. So I'm thrilled to have her on here. We'll get into her book quite a bit more, and we might even deviate quite a bit from the topics that I normally ask, because I want her to share a lot about how this book came about. But first, Leslie, why don't you share with our listeners what state you live in the Pacific Northwest?
I live in Talent, Oregon. I'm retired. I'm a quilter, and I also play the flute, but I am officially retired from actually making money.
Oh, lucky you. So you get to write and promote your book. That's exciting.
It is, and that's practically a full-time job anyway.
Oh, it certainly is. So, Leslie, do you play the flute in an orchestra?
I don't. I used to. I used to do it professionally, and I kind of retired from that. I just play for myself and once in a while play with a small group or other flutists.
Oh, beautiful instrument. So when I was in school, you know, they had all of us take band or, you know, do something else. And I chose the flute. So I played the flute all through junior high and high school. I still have my flute somewhere. Don't know if I can play it anymore. But so what a wonderful connection. I think it's the most beautiful.
Oh, instrument. That's fun.
Yeah.
That's fun.
So, Leslie, I usually ask this one question, and it kind of does stump authors a little bit because I didn't prepare you for it. But what's one thing you would like to let your new readers that don't know you, that are listening to this for the first time, what's one thing you'd like them to know about you right up front?
I always follow through with everything that I do, and I'm a very hard worker. I don't give up. Yeah, I think that's one of the things my publisher likes about me. She can always count on me. If I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. And I enjoy that. I enjoy completing projects. I enjoy research. I'm very energetic. And I guess that's what I'd like people to know about me.
Those are awesome, awesome things, because not a lot of people know, readers don't often know how much time goes into a book and how much energy it takes to go into it. It is a full-time job. And so those are all the things that are making you successful, and I view you successful. So I believe my listeners will want to go to your website and see all the wonderful places that you're doing some book signings. So let's dig into this book. Let's talk a little bit about it. Why don't you share with us the name of the title of the book and give us some history about it first, because it's absolutely fascinating to me how you started this process.
I'd love to.
Okay.
Yeah, the name of this book is Dearest Minnie, A Sailor's Story, and it's Travel with Teddy Roosevelt's Great White Fleet, 1907 to 1909. And that's going to be a blank for a lot of people, as it was for me. And I want to give just a little bit of history of this. This all started when I was 10 years old, and I had inherited a huge box with several albums of postcards from my grandfather's cousin, someone whom I had never met. Mm-hmm. And they were postcards from all around the world, and just really fun for a youngster to look through with places I'd never heard of. And I kept them with me, even as an adult. I kept traveling with me, and I became interested in collecting old postcards as I became interested in history through college. Mm-hmm. And I was living in New York, and a postcard club was forming. I saw the ad in the newspaper, and they said, bring postcards to show and tell. And I put them all in chronological order, and I went to the meeting, and I said, okay, can somebody tell me about these cards? I'm not understanding what's going on here. Mm-hmm. And I still remember one of the gentlemen, his face dropped, his mouth open, and he said, these are from the Great White Fleet.
Oh, my head.
And I, like almost everybody else, I said, the Great White what? I hadn't a clue.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah. They said, okay, how many cards do you have? And I said, probably about 300. And they said, you have to write a book.
I love
it. So that was 1996. So I spent 6 years of research. Luckily, I was living on the East Coast. So that meant I had access to the New York Library, the Boston Library, Library of Congress, Annapolis Museum and Library, and I read every single thing I could get hold of. So to find out information that these postcards were sent to Minnie, who was my grandfather's cousin, from a sailor who was on the USS Virginia as they traveled around the world. And they traveled around the world between 1907 and 1909. This is Teddy Roosevelt's last big hurrah before he left office as a president. And in his autobiography, he actually puts this as the highest mark. This was the best thing, the thing that he wanted to be known for, which, of course, it's hardly ever seen in a history book. But never before have 16 battleships circled the Earth on a goodwill tour, and probably this will never happen again either. And we were the only country to have white battleships. Every other country, of course, had what I call battleship gray. And no other country had attempted to do this, mainly because each battleship, while traveling, consumed 90 tons of coal a day.
Oh, my goodness.
So it meant that they had to be close to shore in order to coal approximately every 2 weeks. So how was this going to happen to go all around the world? So I did my research. And I took all the writing from the postcards, because Maurice, his name was Maurice, what he did was to write all the messages on the back of the postcards and didn't put an address. He filled it with his letters and then put it in an envelope and then put the cards in an envelope when they reached a port and sent it to many. So I used all of his writing plus my research and put it in a form where Maurice is telling the whole story. And we had a little argument with my publisher to begin with. Bless her heart, she knows what she's talking about. And I said, this is a narrative nonfiction. And she said, no, it's not. I said, yes, it is. Everything in there is true. I said, I have 4 pages of bibliography. Everything is factual. She said, yes. But Maurice didn't say some of those things you did.
Oh, gotcha. Great wisdom there.
So on my book cover, it says historically accurate, inspired by real life events. That's pretty creative.
I love it. You landed on such a gold mine in my mind as a historical fiction author, soon to be in my future life, when I heard and I read about this book and that you had carried those postcards with you just amazes me. I would love to uncover something like that myself. It's just beautiful. So here's my one main question, if you can answer it. Did Maurice and Minnie ever really get together? Or were they just dating? Or can you tell us that?
You know what? I get answered that question all the time.
Yeah.
My book, I can sell it to you for
$30. Awesome. I will, you know what, listeners? There's a good lesson. Now you have to read the book like I do to find out.
That's right. And the reason why the cost is that way is that I had 3 publishers before Suzanne Pierrot who said that they would like to publish the book early on in the early 20th and 21st century, you know, up until 2010. And they wanted to publish it with the colored photographs. There's only over 260 colored postcards. They wanted to make them black and white.
Oh, no.
So that it was, yeah, exactly. So it was, would be cost, it wouldn't cost as much. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't self-publish with them in color, mm-hmm. and they couldn't figure out at that point in time how to print the book and still retain the color. So, mm-hmm. but Suzanne figured it out, and so I have over 260 colored pictures.
Oh, how gorgeous. I'm a history fanatic. And what's funny, Leslie, I was telling you before we started the podcast, so my listeners can hear this too. My husband and I just watched a documentary about this whole Roosevelt's whole life. Actually, it's the whole Roosevelt's, all of them. And it did go in just a little detail, just a teeny bit of detail about this time of his life. And we were fascinated by it, but it didn't go deep into it, right? And so when I was researching you before you were coming on for the podcast, I got super excited because my husband's going to love this book, especially if there's great pictures in there. So it's definitely going to have to be on the purchase for him because it's a fascinating time of history. Just wonderful. So
I like it because it's a piece of history that so very few people know anything about.
And that you're connected with. That's what's interesting to me, that you're so personally connected in the sense that you were given this box full of gold in my mind as a kid and you kept them.
Well, and I agree. And one of the reasons why I kept pushing to have it published was that I did send the book originally also to Annapolis to see if they would publish it. They had five readers read it. And I got a letter back. It was not a form letter. And it said all five readers liked it and would like to have it published there by Annapolis. Mm-hmm. However, it was not about an officer. If it had been about an officer, I would, and because they said that, I said, this has to be published. This is an enlisted man.
Yes.
You know, he's just as good as all of the officers out there.
Good for you. I'm so proud that you did that. Awesome. And so let's talk a little bit about this publishing, because you're alluding a little bit in our talk here about the publisher that's finally picked it up. So you're traditionally published, if what I'm understanding, right? And tell us a little bit about the publishing company, First Steps Publishing, because it's very fascinating. I think my listeners would be very interested in them. A little bit.
Well, First Step Publishing is exactly that. She takes on many times the people that are first time published or people that have been published before and been very discouraged with mm-hmm. their publisher. So they're, it's my understanding, they're fairly newbies.
Mm-hmm.
And she walked them through every step of the way. Last year, this book was published exactly a year ago. And sometimes I was on the phone 2 and 3 times with her a day.
Wow.
Call me. No problem. You have any questions? Call me. And if I didn't call her in a day or two, she'd call me. Have you gotten this done? Have you checked this out? Walking me through every single step.
Wow.
You know, it was, she's just fabulous. She's also an artist,
mm-hmm.
which helped as far as how she puts the format together. I'd never thought of putting it together the way that she has done. Mm-hmm. And the cover.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the cover was originally from the Boston Globe, Sunday Supplement, 1908.
Mm.
So, and she put the background and everything available. She's extremely smart and just a hard worker. I think she works 7 days a week.
I love it. And what's really fun for my podcast listeners, so I met Leslie through Peter, and now Leslie and I are meeting all of you. And then I actually met Susan, the publisher she's talking about, before Leslie and I had this podcast interview. And I think I might be able to get her to come on to talk about the publishing industry, which I think would be so fascinating because she does help people with self-publishing, traditional publishing and a hybrid mix, which is exactly kind of what this whole podcast was about. You know, let's get out there and find out what's out there and find the people that can connect with us. So I'm so glad
you met.
I love your story. I'm so can't wait to hear you read some of it. But let me ask you a couple more questions before we get started in that. Do you were you involved in some support groups or agency associations as an author in the last few years that you can recommend to some of our other aspiring authors?
Well, I'm sure because this is basically from the Northwest, the Willamette Writers Conference that's held in Portland every August. I highly recommend that. And it's a place to not only meet other authors, but meet agents, meet publishers, talk one-on-one with publishers and agents, and also take different classes that are able to help each person, depending on their genre or what they're looking for, to be better writers. Mm-hmm. And I really recommend that because it's a great place to meet other writers.
I've had I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I certainly recommend being in a writer's group. And if you can't find one, create one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you have a writer's group that you work with on a regular basis?
Yes, I do. I was the facilitator mm-hmm. of a writer's group for a while. And right now, you mentioned Peter Gibb. Mm-hmm. Peter Gibb pulled together some serious writers, and so we're working together right now this summer.
Oh, I'm
so I'm usually almost, yeah. you have to be with other people because writing is such a solitary thing. You know, you could be stuck at your computer all day sitting, and it's so easy to just put off writing because, you know, there isn't anybody pushing you.
Exactly.
You know, like I have to have something ready to go by next Tuesday. I'd better be at the computer and make that happen kind mm-hmm. of thing.
I love it. Boy, I wished I lived closer to you and Peter because I'd be coming to your group because I already love you and Peter are just fabulous authors. And so I'd be like, man, would love to be part of that group. I started a writer's group in my area because I couldn't find something that was going to fit my needs. So I started one. We're relatively only about 4 or 5 months old. And some of the authors from the podcast that live in my area have joined that group too. So it's been quite fun.
Wonderful.
Yeah, very good. So Leslie, before I have you set up the stage to share a little bit of the reading for us, tell me what inspires you to keep going with this book or just as an author, what's your inspiration?
You know, I would have to say what we've already talked about. It was family. Mm-hmm. And it was also because he was a sailor and Minnie was just somebody like us. She mm-hmm. was an average citizen, you know, and I wanted them out there. I thought this is the way to write and have people that were real out in the public and let them know what life was like on board ship during that period of time for an enlisted man.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh, I just got chills because I love that vision and that push for you that you really felt that because there's so much out there that we don't know about everyday life, you know, and how incredible it was. We just see what we're told in history books or in history lessons, but there were some really beautiful things going on that we might not know about unless somebody tells the story. So thank you for writing
That's
the
right.
book, right?
Thank you.
Okay. So let's set the stage. What's going to happen is tell us a little bit about the section you're going to read about if you can. And then I'm going to go quiet and sit back and enjoy it with the listeners. And then afterwards, I'll finish out our interview.
Okay, great. What I'm doing is reading kind of in the middle of the book. As you recall, they went around the world. Okay, so they started at Hampton Roads, Virginia, and went around the Cape, South America, because the Panama Canal, Isthmus Canal, was not completed at that point. So they had to go around the Cape, and they came up Mexico. They had target practice and then went up the West Coast. And when they came to San Francisco, they lingered quite a long time so that they could also get repairs for their ship before they went out to Hawaii, went to Seattle and then from Hawaii. So again, this is a letter to Minnie, and it's dated Thursday, 7th of May, 1908. Dear Minnie, resuming our formation, we left Santa Cruz yesterday for the short sail northward. Just before we entered the San Francisco Bay, we were met by 8 armored cruisers from the Pacific Fleet. The fog was so thick it seemed to hug the water. But at precisely noon, the clouds lifted to reveal 42 warships, including 18 battleships, 6 destroyers, and 6 auxiliaries. We were joined by every gunboat and torpedo boat on the West Coast. Today, the newspaper estimated over 1 million people crowded the waterfront, rooftops and private boats, while thousands of spectators blackened the surrounding hills, waving flags. More people than I've ever seen in my life. We could see many people had brought tents, and the paper further stated that a few were able to rent view windows on Telegraph Hill to witness this event. I wish you could have been here. I also read that the railroads estimated they had brought about 300,000 people into the city during the 48 hours before our arrival. No wonder we saw so many tents. A huge hot air balloon greeted us, stringing 2 side-by-side large banners saying, "Welcome, Examiner," our greeting from the local newspaper, the San Francisco Examiner. Oil and gasoline fueled the balloon while it controlled by an aeronaut from Australia. That aeronaut did not have an easy task. The balloon had to rise about 2,500 feet to be above our ships. And when the balloon was right above us, the aeronaut swung his legs on a trapeze, leaving his hands free to hold American flags and wave to us. I'm including the picture that appeared in the paper so you can get a better idea of what I'm talking about. Ferries, schooners, tugs, and yachts were all over the bay, making as much racket as possible. The Presidio and Fort Baker shot their cannons, and we saluted back. This began the celebrations. Last night, Frisco saw 26 battleships flying banners and flags with shimmering lights that illuminated each ship's name. I'm sure this beautiful sight could be seen for miles. Each night we're in harbor, we'll continue this practice. We all stayed aboard last night, resting up for the parade schedule for today. The officers weren't so lucky, however. They had to attend a reception and a ball held at the newly opened Fairmont Hotel, and I'll put a aside here, newly opened Fairmont Hotel. You recall the big earthquake was 1906 in San Francisco, and they were still under reconstruction in 1908.
Oh.
Minnie, what a parade we had today. You thought the march in Los Angeles was spectacular. I wish you could have seen this one. There were approximately 7,500 Marines and Blue Jackets accompanied by over 2,000 federal troops from the San Francisco area paraded down Market Street, but what looked like a newly paved Van Ness Avenue. I left the Virginia at 7 p.m. and didn't return until 2 this morning. We were granted shore leave after the parade, so not only did I buy these postals to share some of the sights of the city with you, but I was able to reunite with your brother, Frank. The beautiful buildings and new skyscrapers are amazing. Some are as high as 3 stories. I'll make sure Frank takes these back to you when he returns. You readily notice the Californiaism in these pretty vistas, just like the tropics, except it's also pretty windy here. It's late, and I must now sleep. Secretary of Henry Victor Metcalf will be viewing our fleet and the Pacific Fleet as well while aboard the Yorktown for just a few hours. That means we'll be playing the national anthem for quite a while tomorrow. Sweet dreams, my little girl, Maurice. And I'm going to read one also in dealing with San Francisco because he talked about the animals. There were many, many animals aboard these ships, and I'm going to read this little bit that he wrote to Minnie shortly thereafter. It was on May 11th. "Dear Minnie, let me give you an update on the animals aboard our ships. I remember you asked about them in Los Angeles, so I did a little investigating. I found out that the 2 monkeys on board the Louisiana were discharged for bad behavior. It seems they were throwing everything they could lay their hands on out the port window of Lieutenant Evans' stateroom. And at first, everything went well with the monkeys after they were brought on board from one of the South American countries. After we had sailed past Lima, rumor has it that Lieutenant Evans entered his room and watched a pair of his shoes and then a toothbrush sail out the porthole. The monkeys were put ashore. The Louisiana claims the largest number of pets on board. Hunter, one of the officers, has a thoroughbred French poodle named Pear. They are also very proud of the two parrots purchased in Trinidad. There are four other dogs owned by officers, Salty, Mutt, and Rummy, plus another bull terrier and two cats. Bill the goat resides on the Vermont. They tell me he's a fire eater who eats burning cigarettes, cigars, and any other kind of hot ashes. The Carasot acquired a monkey from Lima, Peru, and they named him Tom. He's continually burning his fingers on the hot stove, so he's been barred from the galley. They're also having trouble with the parrot they brought back from Trinidad. The bird only speaks Spanish and some broken English. When the sailors line up for inspection every morning, the parrot laughs and says, "Beat it! Cut it out!" and a few swear words, which I can't write here. To make matters worse, Tom doesn't like the parrot, so the two must be separated. The bird, however, has made friends with the captain's Scottish Terrier. The Minnesota has a pet raccoon. That animal always seems to know when payday comes and stands waiting for his sweets. No one has seen him for several days, however, so it's assumed the coon is either hibernating or has been stolen. Well, there again, like I said, visitors take anything they can carry off the ship, so who knows? Take care, and I'll write again when I get some free time. Maurice.
Oh, my goodness, that is fantastic. I'm trying not to laugh too hard so the listeners could hear the story.
Well, interesting enough, when they went to Seattle, they were given more animals to Seattle, and I actually put word for word an article that was written in the Seattle newspaper. They gave each ship a bear cub, a little tiny bear cub, and there's a little picture of one of them in the book, a little less than 9 pounds, looked like a little puppy.
Mm-hmm.
So when they went to Australia, they also received kangaroos.
It was
like a floating zoo.
That's astonishing. And the part that just stopped me in my tracks when I was listening was that they let the monkeys off at shore. Well, did we just dump the monkeys off somewhere offshore?
Oh, yeah. Bye-bye.
Oh, my goodness. That's awesome. Leslie, what fantastic. And, you know, Maurice was not a bad writer himself, so.
No, he wasn't. I enjoyed reading his postcards. Yes, absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for sharing this with us. Now, listeners, if you want to find out more about Maurice and Minnie and this entire adventure, don't hesitate to find Leslie through the podcast show notes and purchase the book. Give it as a gift. That's my plan, because I think it's going to be a great gift for Father's Day. So this might come out after Father's Day, so you can do it for Christmas. And Leslie, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I really do appreciate you being here. It's been a blast.
Well, it's been a pleasure meeting you. I hope I get to see you actually in person. That would be fun.
Yes, well, the Willamette Conference is coming up. I might get myself there this year or maybe next year. So maybe we can all connect there.
You know, that would be fun with all the people that you're interviewing.
Yeah, that might be an option. So I'll have to plan it. This year I'm doing a big move, so I don't know if I can make it in August. But
yeah, that's difficult. Been there.
Yeah. Well, Leslie, thank you so much for being here. We'll stay in touch. And listeners, definitely go find Leslie and get this book, because it's a winner, that's for sure.
Okay. Thank you so much, Vicki.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. We hoped you loved hearing from the author as much as we did. If you did enjoy the author, make sure you find them on social media. Buy their book and write a review. Are you a published author and would like to be featured on the podcast? Visit us at our website to learn more. You can help support the production of this podcast by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Share the podcast with your friends. And most importantly, become a supporter.
Supporters receive monthly bonus podcasts and a newsletter filled with tips from our authors. To find out more how to become a supporter, visit our website. And finally, I hope you always remember to enjoy the journey. Until next week, this is Vicki J. Carter saying goodbye.